From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Live video is the next big thing barreling down on your digital world. Streamed from your phone to your friends and fans, streamed to your phone from TV studios, pool parties, or live news events. It's been growing for about a year now, and the tech giants are just getting into the game. Facebook, for one, now in a big way. This hour On Point, live streaming, what it means when the internet goes live in video. Joining me now from New Braunfels, Texas, via Skype, is Omar Gayaga, technology and culture reporter for the Austin American Statesman and for its new tech website, 512tech.com. Omar, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Hi, Jay. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Help us understand this newest social media sensation, live video streaming. How does it work?
Well, I mean, imagine you take photos and upload them on Instagram, or you write a status update on Facebook. Imagine if you're doing live video broadcasting to all of your Facebook friends or Twitter followers or what have you in the moment. Anything can happen. It's like live broadcast television, but it's unfiltered. You're going directly to the people that are watching your broadcast in the moment.
So let's get a couple of examples here. Here's one from the Academy Awards. The department store chain Kohl's live streamed Vanessa Bayer's after party, where she engaged her viewers asking for their own thank you speeches. Here she is, Bayer, reading a speech from a viewer and thanking the cashier at Kohl's.
And now I'm going to read the thank you speech that you all voted for. Okay, here goes. It's from Lori Sullivan, and she says, "I would thank my cashier for their patience."
And here's U.S. Women's World Cup soccer champion Alex Morgan answering fan questions on Facebook live in early March.
I am live on my first Facebook video chat. Hi, guys. You guys can ask questions, and I think they'll pop up on the screen, so I'll answer them as they go along. I'm looking up some questions here, kind of scrolling through it. All right. How awkward is this for me? Not at all. Just a little bit. Wish I could see you guys. Unfortunately, I'm just looking at myself.
Awkward as it may be, it's the new thing. Omar, so you're talking to people, with people, and people are posting comments as you're streaming. Is that right?
Absolutely. That's one of the things that that I really like about Periscope, which is owned by Twitter and is sort of was out last year after South by Southwest Interactive. You can see a stream of people talking to you, and you can either choose to respond to them, talk to the camera directly and address what they're saying, or you can kind of do your own thing as they're talking, I guess, behind your back. I believe that there's sort of a language that's being developed by certain people, including one of the guests that'll be on later today, this hour, mm-hmm. Where you're kind of talking to the people, but also kind of showing them something at the same time. It requires, I think, a kind of a separation in your brain between are you talking to people? Are you doing your own thing and letting them have a window into your life? I think it's developing into kind of its own kind of broadcast language that's different from traditional broadcasting.
And you can track the real-time metrics on your audience while this is happening.
Yeah, you can see how many people are tuning in, how many people are dropping in, dropping out. If you get someone who's being obnoxious, you can block them. There's all kinds of things. And there's definitely a different culture to Periscope, which is kind of its own thing owned by Twitter, and Facebook Live, where it's more people you actually know, people who are friends and family. I think there's definitely a different vibe between the two. But both are very powerful. Just the idea that you could just pick up your phone at any time and stream to everybody you know live video, that's a very powerful tool.
So you mentioned Periscope. That was another company, of course, with live video streaming. Meerkat was in on it. But now that Facebook is doing it, bigger audiences, this takes it to a new level?
Absolutely. I work for a media website and a newspaper, and we have a media property called Austin 360. And a couple of weeks ago during South by Southwest Interactive, my podcast co-host Holly Mosley and I broadcasted from a art gallery, a Mondo poster gallery of Richard Linklater's films. They were doing a tribute to his films. And we were tapping into an audience of 110,000 Austin 360 people on Facebook. They already had that built-in audience. So we were able to, you know, attract 400 or 500 people, you know, right in the moment, completely spontaneously, to kind of view the posters at this gallery. It was very powerful to be able to just say, oh, we already have that audience. Let's just, stream for them. Whereas with Periscope, if you're starting fresh, you kind of have to build up that source of followers. Mm. Whereas with Facebook, most media organizations already have that group of people who are invested in what they're doing. Mm.
So the thrill of it is that anything can happen. Of course, it's live. But how do you monitor or block content that may be questionable or even inappropriate?
That's kind of the challenge, especially if you are a family-friendly media organization, is, you know, anyone could pop into the frame and do something, just like any kind of live broadcast that's happening on a TV station. You could have some heckler or somebody come in and streak you. You really have no control over that. And I think that's part of the appeal of it, is that anything can happen. About a year ago when Periscope started taking off, I actually watched Oprah Winfrey do one of her first Periscopes from her magazine headquarters. And she was just going from desk to desk, talking to different editors from the magazine. And I thought, anything could happen right now. Oprah could fire somebody. Somebody could come up to Oprah and say something terrible on camera, and she would have no control. There's no filter. There's no editing. No one's going to go into post-production and do something to that video. It's completely live, and I think that's part of the thrill of it.
Here she is, Oprah, speaking on Facebook Live in March, inviting viewers to join her new 21-day meditation program and also promoting one of her guests.
Hi, everybody. Facebook Live. It's Sunday afternoon. I'm in beautiful Chicago, and I just finished meditating. And I wanted to offer this opportunity for those of you who haven't signed up already. Tomorrow, March 21st, Deepak Chopra and I are starting another meditation, Shedding the Weight, Mind, Body, and Spirit.
Okay, there's Oprah meditating, but we saw a traumatic event recently on Facebook Live. Here's that sound. It was last week when a 31-year-old Chicago man, an alleged gang member, Brian Fields, stood in front of a closed corner store and live streamed on Facebook. Here he is telling his friends to turn up the music, pipe it up, he says. He announces that the neighborhood kids need this particular store on the corner. And suddenly, shots ring out. Fields is wounded and his phone falls to the ground. It continues live streaming as the gunmen drive off. And the music plays on. Here's the haunting sound of his shooting.
Pipe it up.
Sack of drugs, so.
I slid so they pop snow back open for the kids.
So, Omar, there's the downside to this, right? I mean, this really changes the way we communicate in a big way.
Well, yeah, it democratizes this technology to anyone that wants to broadcast at any moment. And like we said, you know, anything can happen. I mean, we've had instances like this on Twitter. There was the shooting on television last year that involved a person, you know, pretty much live tweeting what they were about to do. It's every social media network has had to deal with this issue of when you put that much power in the hands of people, what are they going to do with it? It can be very, very often unpredictable.
Let me bring in another voice here, Omar. Hold on. Here's Lauren Friedman. She's a contributor to Forbes magazine's Under 30 column and head of social business enablement at the software company Adobe. Welcome to you, Lauren. Nice to have you.
Hi, Jane.
So what's so appealing about live streaming for you? Have you used it?
I have used it. And speaking on behalf of kind of the millennial generation, if you will, I think that live streaming is definitely an incredible way to communicate, whether it's with each other, whether it's with brands, et cetera. It's definitely personal. It's more intimate, as we talked about. And it's definitely taking on the millennial generation by storm.
So we're talking about Facebook Live getting into this in a big way. I know millennials are using this, but I also thought millennials are abandoning Facebook in big numbers. Is that right?
Right. So there's been this perception that millennials are abandoning Facebook and looking for less parent-friendly platform. So a platform where they don't have to worry about what their mom sees or what their grandma sees even. But there was actually a new Comscore report that was released last Wednesday that says otherwise. In fact, the report shows that millennials spend more than 2.5 times as many minutes on Facebook as they do on its closest competitor, which is Snapchat, which is also somewhat live streaming, although it's still a video app. But I mean, I would definitely say that Facebook has that kind of challenge to overcome within that millennial generation, and making sure that they're producing content or showcasing certain content that's going to appeal specifically to that generation.
So how will this change? How will live streaming change how people use social media, how you use social media? Are you going to give up texting and tweeting and just start live streaming?
No, I don't think so, because live streaming is one to many, and I think there's still necessity for that one-to-one communication. So with texting or with, you know, even something like Snapchat, when you can send people specific videos or specific messages. But it's definitely a one-to-many. I know personally, I watch a lot of live streamers. I watch a lot of folks on Periscope and definitely YouTube, which is huge as well. I know Google is making a big play in the space. I think this space is definitely heating up, and the way that people think about content, specifically from a brand perspective, is going to be interesting. Brands, you know, using these live streaming platforms have the opportunity to showcase that behind-the-scenes footage, that ability to really humanize themselves, and people want to connect with the people at the brands. What we're seeing from a millennial generation is that we're less loyal to brands specifically, and we want to hear that human voice behind the brand.
Lauren, thank you so much. Lauren Friedman is a contributor to Forbes Magazine Under 30 column. She's head of social business enablement at the software company Adobe in San Francisco. Lauren, today, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jane.
Omar, so picking up on what Lauren said, I mean, we've got Facebook Live, you've mentioned Periscope, YouTube. I'm looking at a headline here. YouTube is the sleeping giant of live streaming. They're getting into this as well.
Yeah, YouTube is interesting in that in a couple of fronts, and one is actually gaming. What's become very popular is people broadcasting themselves playing video games, the phenomenon known as Let's Play. There's a company called Twitch that was acquired by Amazon, and they have become a really big giant in that area, and then YouTube started gaming, YouTube gaming, in order to compete with that. So, you know, the idea that, you know, I'm playing a video game, people want to watch me comment on it, that's a huge phenomenon that kind of came out of nowhere.
Well, we're talking about live streaming this hour. Just one more little app in your life, or is this big and different, head spinning or invigorating? More after this break. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about Facebook Live, Periscope, YouTube Live this hour. We'll get to the implications of all this for media companies in a moment, but let's turn first to Los Angeles and Amanda Oleander. She's an artist who's been live streaming for the past year. Amanda, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for having me.
Hi. How long have you used live streaming? How do you do it? How are you using it?
It's been over a year. It's been amazing. Definitely a life changer. I live stream pretty much every day. And I'm an artist. I paint and I draw for a living. So I joined Periscope on the second day that it launched. I did not know it was the second day. I just had somebody recommend it to me. And ever since then, my community has grown to over 500,000 people. And they just see my day-to-day, and they see me painting and the process. It's been great.
So does it create a new sense of community? Is that what you're saying, as well as a possible new business?
Yes. So the community is amazing, and it doesn't compare to any other social media network. So, for example, if you're YouTubing, you get people that may be that may watch all your videos, but the commenters don't know each other. And on Instagram, the commenters don't really know each other either. But when it comes to live streaming and Periscope, there's everybody knows each other. It's kind of like a group chat. So it's really incredible what has happened with this last year. I mean, if somebody's sick, I have people, they send, like, I'm talking about over hundreds of dollars of balloons and flowers to the person that's in the hospital, or somebody has bought somebody else a plane ticket to go visit each other. It's just been an amazing community. I've never seen anything like it. I've met a lot of people from the app.
Amanda Oleander is an artist. She's been live streaming for the past year. She has over 500,000 followers. She's in L.A. Amanda, thank you so much for your time today. A lot of social media response here. Julia says, I've done some live video on Facebook. It's pretty intimidating. No edits, just full realness. I think that it will completely explode this year, and we'll see a lot more of it. Another woman says, live streams are great if they work. I find that they're often buggy with lots of digital fragmentation. resolution, bad audio, etc. Granted, I generally watch over a pitifully slow DSL connection, but still. And then 29er says, can't wait for the live stream of your cat playing with yarn and your root beer float being made. Omar Gallega, jump back in here. Talk about the newness of this. I mean, is this going to catch on? We sort of saw this happen a few years ago, and it didn't really work so well, but we're at it again.
Yeah, I think some of it is people's internet connections. Our phones did not have as fast a speed of downloading and being able to be online all the time as they do now. When we were back on 3G and, you know, and the beginnings of 4G, we our phones really couldn't handle that kind of internet connection. Now, you know, with LTE and the more powerful phones that we're using, we actually can do that whenever we want. And the uploading is a lot smoother. The video is a lot better. You still run into pockets of where there's not good connectivity. But and if you're doing this from home, and you have a fast Wi-Fi, it's even better. I was going to say I'm actually Facebook Live-ing this right now as we're speaking. I thought it'd be fun to do Facebook Live as we're talking about Facebook Live. So I'm having kind of a running conversation with people watching me as I sit here in front of a microphone and talk.
It's incredible to think about. Let's get some calls in here. A lot of listeners want to get in on this. Sam in Wickford, Rhode Island. Hi, Sam. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
So my brother just took a trip to Japan recently, and it was awesome. Despite him being 13 hours ahead of me and literally on the other side of the globe, I was able to see what he was doing day to day. And if there was something particularly cool he was doing, he'd first wake me up, and then he would show me what he was up to. It was a lot of fun being able to keep in touch with him.
You followed his travels live halfway around the world.
Yep.
Very good, Sam. Thanks so much for the call. Let's go to RJ in Norman, Oklahoma. RJ, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. What do you think? What do you think of live streaming on Facebook, especially?
Well, ma'am, in particular, I wanted to know why Facebook is pushing this so hard. I get a notification every time one of the pages that I've liked on Facebook goes to live streaming. It's not a notification I'm particularly intrigued by. I find it really annoying, as a matter of fact, and I turn them off. There are some people that I would like to see live stream, but I don't want to see everybody live stream. Mm. And I wanted to know why they're making this push.
How do you discriminate? RJ, thank you. Omar, do you have an answer?
Yeah, that's a very good question. There was actually a New York Times article over the weekend about people starting to get annoyed with all of those Facebook notifications. I think this is an area that Facebook is going to start investing in and start getting people on board for. If you remember what happened with Facebook Messenger, nobody wanted to use Facebook Messenger. Nobody wanted a separate app for Facebook Messenger. And Facebook kept pushing and pushing. And now it feels like a lot of us are using it every day and using the app. So I think Facebook has a lot of weight it can throw around, and this if it decides this is important, this is critical to our mission, they're going to get people on board. And I think the notification issue is going to be something that they're going to have to address at some point, where people can just opt out entirely from live streams of getting those notifications. But for now, I think Facebook is in an experimental phase. They want to see how quickly they can get people onto this and getting them excited about it. And in order to do that, they have to get it in front of people.
Let's go back to the phones now. Roberta in Covington, Louisiana. Hi, Roberta. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me on.
Go ahead. What do you make of this?
Well, I've been using Periscope for about a year. I haven't tried Facebook Live yet for different reasons. But the way I use Periscope is at concerts. I go to a lot of live music shows in Greater New Orleans, and I like to broadcast from these shows, and it's and give added exposure to my favorite musicians who are kind of small. And so my followers like to see, who I'm going to see. But what's great, too, is the musicians that I follow who broadcast from the road, I get to see what they're experiencing when they're out touring. And that's been really interesting, too. So following musicians, following comedians, when they're out on the road, you can see all kinds of funny things happen and really great moments in music.
Totally different experience.
Well, one of the biggest broadcasters who everybody should follow, because they do it a lot and there's always fun stuff, is George Clinton. And Parliament Funkadelic, they broadcast all kinds of stuff from the road, and they do it often.
Thanks for the tip, Roberta. Thank you so much. Let's go to David in Savannah, Georgia. David, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'm actually used to be a pretty big video game streamer and YouTuber, and I very much love the idea of having live stream for a lot of things. But I recall 3 years ago when the PS4 first introduced live stream. One of the users actually took advantage of it in a very wrong way, and he got his wife drunk and actually raped her on the stream, and it was awful. I guess my sort of thing or question would be is, how can you prevent such a thing from happening? Because this was a huge backlash for the video game community, because when something like this happens to one of us, all of us look bad. And, you know, it's something you hope never happens, but how do you prevent people from taking advantage of it?
David, thank you. It goes back to the video we saw out of Chicago, Omar. I mean, speak to this point that David brings up.
Yeah, I don't know that you can prevent that, because you have people generating literally millions of hours of content. And with, you know, there's not going to be anyone to sit there and monitor all that. These companies definitely can't devote resources to watching every single stream that somebody generates. So it's going to be the kind of the same issue as you have with Twitter or with parts of the web, where you really can't control things in the moment. You can go back and delete things or try to set up filters. But, you know, as far as if somebody decides that they're going to go on a live broadcast and do something terrible and no one knows about it in advance, there's not a whole lot you can do to prevent that.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation now. Douglas Rushkoff is professor of media theory and digital economics at the City University of New York. His most recent book is Throwing Rocks at the Google Bus: How Growth Became the Enemy of Prosperity. He joins us from New York. Doug, welcome back to On Point. Nice to have you again.
Hey, great to be with you.
So what do you make of this new social media tool, live video streaming?
Well, I mean, it could just be my perspective, you know, being so fresh off this book, but for me, it really just looks like a business plan in search of a technology. You know, these companies have to grow, and the way that they grow is by colonizing more of our time and attention. So they see something that someone else is doing, like what Periscope is doing, and say, oh, we've got to integrate this into our platform so people spend all their time in one way or another using our stuff.
How does this affect media companies, Mr. Rushkoff? I mean, they tried live streaming a few years ago. It didn't work so well. I mean, just does this come down to revenue, how much money companies will make, how much they'll get for video streaming viewed on social networks? Is there an outlet for that?
So. Yeah, I mean, you know, on the one hand, they want to increase just the pure amount of time we spend online, because the more time we spend engaged, you know, the more that they can expand what they're doing. You know, our time, our attention is their new territory. But I don't see the long-term genuine revenue strategy here. You know, the marketing and advertising, you know, one of your first guests was talking about brands. You know, marketing and advertising tops out at about 3 or 4% of GDP. You know, you can't have Google and Facebook and Twitter and all these companies somehow growing to the size they want to grow based on what some sort of passive marketing of things through people over their live video feeds. You know, and right now, it already costs me and you money to reach all of our followers on Facebook. So just because you have a live video doesn't even mean you're reaching everybody. You know, I feel in some ways it's one medium trying to cannibalize another one. Like for me, the turning point on Periscope was when there was a very big prize fight, one of those pay-per-view prize fights on, and people started streaming live video of their television sets so that people who couldn't spend the couple of $100 to watch the prize fight could watch it. And all of a sudden, everyone realized, oh my gosh, you know, what makes money for one side of the media equation is going to cost money for another side.
Facebook is also talking about letting media partners broadcast live video using their own professional grade studio recording equipment. They're talking about cutting deals with TV networks, with sports leagues, including the NFL. I mean, we're talking maybe sporting events, watching the Olympics, you know, on your cell phone. Applications are endless.
Yeah, I mean, this is what we're looking at. I mean, you know, the thing that happens on video sites and music sites, what they call it, the winner takes all effect. It's something called power law dynamics, where when things are very available to many people on the internet, we end up getting sort of a one winner at the top, like a Taylor Swift on the top of the charts, and everybody else sells maybe one or zero records. And the same thing seems to be happening for these companies, where you have Netflix competing against Amazon, competing against Apple TV, competing against HBO, competing against Facebook TV, competing against the NFL. And it's as if there has to be one king of the hill. They're all really fighting over those same views, those same eyeballs.
Here's some sound from last week on NBC, The Today Show. Carson Daly using Facebook Live for the first time. Here he is figuring it out and interacting with viewers.
Hi, everybody.
Are you live on Facebook right now?
We're good. Hello, everybody on Facebook.
Are these some questions that you're just getting in?
Oh, my gosh. Are these real? I have to blank every morning to start the day off right. Get to work on time. These are changing so fast.
I guess, Douglas Rushkoff, whether or not you can monetize this or not, media companies have no choice but to get in on this or get left behind.
I guess, although getting in on something and spending a whole bunch of investment and losing what it is your company is about may not be worth racing. In other words, Facebook as a social network connecting people, well, maybe if video is part of a social connection, it makes sense. If they're just pivoting in order to grow for their shareholders, then it doesn't. A company like Twitter right now makes $500 million a year, and they make this principally off 140-character messaging app. This revenue is considered a failure by Wall Street. Mm. So they have to expand. They have to grow into all of these other areas. And I feel like we end up with 5 or 10 giant media companies that all look the same, rather than let them specialize in the things they do and actually work together. It's not a scary thing, but it's a little sad to see some of these great companies unable to sustain themselves without growing. And this growth really, it can't keep going on. In other words, eventually it's going to be just Amazon or just Google or just Facebook at the top of the heap.
Omar Gayaga, do you agree with that?
Well, I do to some degree, but I think companies like Periscope, which is owned by Twitter, but they kind of came out of nowhere, and it actually emerged from another company, Meerkat, that was having some success with it last year. So I think you still get kind of companies that come out of nowhere and do something interesting. Do they get swallowed up by your Facebooks and your Amazons? Sometimes they do, and sometimes they go on to do their own thing. Snapchat is something that kind of came out of nowhere and is still doing gangbuster success and has not yet been absorbed into the Facebook Borg. So I think you still get those disruptors that emerge and are just doing something so much better than everybody else is, and in such a unique way that they're able to kind of change the business.
Let's get Matt in here from Buffalo, New York. My Matt, welcome to the program.
Hi there, Jane. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes.
I just feel that, all of these things that people are bringing up with the live streaming, I feel that it's almost a petty use of this technology. I feel that there's a lot of social utility that could be drawn from, let's say, you're an embedded reporter in the middle of, maybe a not-so-friendly area where you might not be able to carry a large television camera and crew and this and that and the other thing. You could, let's say, for example, the Ferguson protests. There were plenty of people using early live streaming, outlets, I guess you should call them, and making it a little more able to connect to the kind of anguish that people were feeling on the street rather than, let's say, people using a goldfish to play Pokemon. There's Twitch plays Pokemon. They got a goldfish to do it, and they actually beat the game with the goldfish.
Matt, thanks
funny,
so much. No, I hear you. Funny, but not. It can be used for good and ill, Omar, I guess.
That's the takeaway. Goldfish on playing Pokemon. <That's>, I can agree. What's interesting, though, back to Douglas's point, is that it's been interesting to watch media companies try to adapt to these more personal technologies. There's a tone to it that doesn't always feel right when you have a big media organization try to get real personal and in your face. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it doesn't quite match up.
Omar Gayaga from the Austin American Statesman, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, it's been great. Thank you for having me.
I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. More after this break. This is On Point.
This On Point podcast and following message are brought to you by Goldman Sachs. For answers to the world's most pressing economic questions, from the latest in emerging markets to finding the next big computing platform, tune in to Exchanges at Goldman Sachs, the firm's podcast. Each episode features in-depth discussions with some of the firm's leading experts on the markets, evolving industries, and the global economy. Subscribe to Exchanges at Goldman Sachs on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud, or listen at gs.com/podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're looking at live streaming this hour and what it means if it becomes a regular part of our digital lives. My guest this hour, Douglas Rushkoff, professor of media theory and digital economics at the City University of New York. And we do finally have Steven Perlberg now, a reporter covering media and advertising for The Wall Street Journal. Steven, welcome. Nice to have you.
Hi, Jane.
So what have you been hearing in this conversation about live streaming, sort of the new big thing on social media?
Sure. I mean, I think any time Facebook does really anything in the media environment, media companies are interested because there's a sense that Facebook is sort of the frenemy. Media companies derive so much of their audience from Facebook, which is a good thing. They obviously want to reach people and sort of fish where the fish are, so to speak. But it means that every tweak or change or new interest point that Facebook has becomes really significant if you're a media company. So when Facebook invested and really started pumping video into people's feeds about a year and a half, 2 years ago, you saw media companies really respond to that and invest in making this sort of shareable, snackable content. And I think the best example would be someone like BuzzFeed. You probably see in your Facebook feed all the time these short videos of some sort of decadent brownie being made in 30 seconds. So the live video addition is an evolution of that. And I think what you're going to see is media companies wanting to, really devote resources to that and gain as much audience as they can, because Facebook controls the pipes. An earlier caller mentioned, the notification you receive when someone goes live, and, they control, what people see. They control the feed. So media companies are going to battle to get into people's feeds. Now the follow-up would be, what does that mean from a revenue standpoint? And as it stands right now, nothing. Facebook doesn't really monetize video in any sort of meaningful way. They're testing a few different things. But media companies just have to kind of go into this hoping that, Facebook will enable this at some point and we'll be able to derive, revenue from live video. But it's unclear.
Well, I can imagine there's a lot of hand-wringing among media executives who say, well, Facebook is taking over, hosting our content with their app.
I think less Facebook is taking over and Facebook has taken over. I mean, I think anyone who thinks that Facebook is not yet the biggest thing in media, hasn't been paying attention necessarily, because it really is all encompassing. And from a media executive standpoint, a lot of them sort of say, look, we kind of have to do this. What other choice do we have? And I think the best example, the context for this, would be something that Facebook has enabled, in recent months, called Instant Articles, which is when a host of media companies put their articles directly on Facebook, as opposed to using it as a conduit to send mobile traffic back to their own websites. And the agreement then is that Facebook will take a cut of the ad revenue if they're the ones to sell the ads. And as a sort of olive branch to media companies, they said, well, look, if you want to sell your own ads in those instant articles, you can keep 100% of the ad revenue. But of course, the bet that Facebook is making is that people would rather have 70%, media companies would rather have 70% of a larger number than 100% of a smaller number, that they're going to be able to sell ads more effectively within Facebook. So media companies, many have embraced this this system and think that, they have had real trouble making money from mobile. And as the world goes to a more mobile situation, Facebook has that's their expertise. So media companies are like, look, if Facebook wants to bring us on and sell the ads and we make some money, maybe this is what we have to do. But in so doing, you give up a lot of the control of your own distribution, and that is hard to stomach for media executives, especially traditional companies that are so used to controlling those pipes.
Let's get more listeners in on this. Alan is waiting from Williamsburg, Virginia. Alan, welcome to On Point. Hello.
Hi. Thanks, Jane, for taking my call. Following what Douglas said earlier regarding using Periscope to watch sporting events, I was one of those viewers who was forced to watch it because the local bars in the area didn't show it, and they don't offer an online streaming paid version. So, forced to use a legal service, essentially, to view it.
Watching an illegal stream of a sporting event that you couldn't get otherwise. Alan, thank you so much. I mean, Steven Perlberg, this is the next big thing, right, that people are going to have to worry about. Media companies are going to have to figure it out.
I think that's true. And one of the issues that Facebook has had in video more broadly, and one of the criticisms, is that as they've invested in video, not necessarily live video, but video more broadly, is that there's a lot of pirated content on Facebook. I think you see it all the time. You know, a Daily Show clip that's uploaded by some user that you've never heard of, but it arrives in your feed and you watch it, and it, you know, accumulates 20 million views. And YouTube had this problem early on. In fact, it took a massive case against Viacom that was only recently settled about a year and a half ago for YouTube to, in 2007, 2008, they developed what they call Content ID, which is a technology where they can make sure there's no pirated content. Facebook is hard at work developing that. And until they make that system more sophisticated, I think a lot of content owners are going to be wary about the platform because they feel like their views are being cannibalized by people stealing it, essentially. So, you know, the Periscope example is a great one, people watching that prize fight. This is new terrain, and these things will have to be figured out either from a technology standpoint or often, you know, maybe from a legal standpoint.
Here's Wendy in Boston. Wendy, welcome to On Point. Hello.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. I'm curious what you and your guests think about the role, the potential role of this new technology in politics, and particularly in things like the current campaign that's going on. So there's been a lot of discussion about how the media has sort of put too much attention toward Trump, and it early on didn't give Bernie Sanders enough attention. And it seems like if this were more ubiquitous, which it sounds like it will be, that it's potentially a game changer, and also for the role of big money in politics, if you know, individuals can sort of create their own advertisements, kind of like super PACs can live stream advertisements, or maybe will eventually have access to candidates rather than the mainstream media. It seems like this could really change the way things are done. Mm.
Wendy, thank you. Stephen Perlberg, I'll give you the first whack at this.
I think that that's a interesting observation, because Donald Trump, one of the main tools that he's used to articulate his message has been Twitter. He's able to kind of reach his audience in an unfiltered way. And to a certain extent, Facebook Live maybe gives even a more unfiltered look. So if Facebook Live was a big component of this a bigger component of this campaign, maybe it would be a tool that he would use instead of, you know, calling into cable news shows. He could reach the masses more directly and not necessarily have to spend on advertising. So, you know, it's another evolution. Twitter, this was the conversation with Twitter, came, you know, onto the scene. And really any new platform, I think, gives people in the news more a more direct way to communicate to the people that they, you know, might be trying to reach.
Douglas Rushkoff, how do you see it? How does live streaming, or how could it impact the political landscape in a campaign season specifically?
You know, the race to the bottom is hard enough to resist in commercial ad-based media. You know, the chase for ratings is what really led to Trump. You know, when I'm thinking about a media space dominated by, you know, 14-year-olds selling makeup and skateboards by any means necessary, I just wonder how far that bottom would be. But the real difference between a live feed like Facebook Live and the news is one really enables us to witness the event, and the other one's there to help us understand what we're seeing. You know, if the medium becomes biased towards purely witnessing things rather than understanding them, then it will be biased more towards sensation. And that's how we get a Trump, which is really a sensationalist-based based candidate. You know, as long as we remember that we're doing all of this activity on a platform that needs to monetize this behavior by any way it can, and that it's configured really for the data, for the data collection, for the looking at the social connections, hopefully we'll be able to treat it a little bit at arm's length. We'll be able to see there's a difference between CNN, say, which in its time was criticized for being a 24/7 mm-hmm. non-editorial news service, and just live streaming internet data.
What about the impact on journalism? I mean, talk about politics. I mean, what happens if everybody can shoot live video? It's citizen journalism on steroids, essentially, Stephen Perlberg.
I mean, and this is an argument I get into all the time. You know, whenever I do my talks, I have a lot of college students come up and say, well, why should you get paid to be a journalist and I don't get paid to do my blog? You know, they think that it should basically all be free. And not that they should get paid, but what they don't understand is that if we don't pay somebody to spend a week or two investigating a story, then we've got nobody to help us counter the claims and stories of public relations firms that are spending millions of dollars to do that. So it's very hard in an age of streaming media like this to impress upon people the difference between being able to see something through your little device and having an actual journalist investigate what's going on, you know, to tell us what is this really a picture of.
Let's get Lisa in here from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Yes.
I'm a communication professor at Gonzaga University, and in some ways it seems to me that this new technology is a remediation of conversation. I'm live streaming with you right now, and I have to say it's pretty scary because I don't know what I'm going to say or how this conversation is going to transpire. And so in some ways it seems that not that the technology is changing the way we communicate, but it's in a relationship with the things that we already kind of do. And the risks associated with live conversation is something I noticed in my college classrooms, that you described it as a thrilling new technology because you don't know what's going to happen. And I agree with that, but I think that is also true in just regular old conversation.
Will we ever look up from our screens again? Lisa, thank you. Let's go to Johan in Detroit, Michigan. Johan, welcome to On Point.
Hi. I just wanted to ask about the implications of, like, privacy related to the streaming and how much data they'd be saving.
What are the security implications of this and privacy implications? Stephen Proberg, would you respond?
Sure. I think that in general, Facebook, why it has such a robust business, so much of a robust advertising business, is that it knows quite a bit about you, and it is able to sell that to advertisers. Advertisers want to reach you, and they know a lot. So, what they're able to glean from, let's say you are live streaming a certain event, or you're live streaming from a certain place, that is potentially going to be added to the base of knowledge that Facebook would have about you. And so, perhaps you often live stream from a baseball game, and a baseball-related advertiser might be able to target you more directly because Facebook knows that. Now, these are things that already kind of happen on the platform, but it's certainly interesting to, as the technology develops, what more will Facebook be able to know about you? And the more that they know, the more ad dollars they're able to glean from advertisers. Mm.
A couple of listener comments here. Joshua on Facebook says, lots of video gamers have already turned into professional live streamers. Where have you all been? Here's Julia, who says, as a female broadcaster and as a watcher, I'm turned off by the pervasive and graphic comments from trolls. Security is absent. Back to that issue. Let's go to Russell in Chesapeake, Virginia. Russell, welcome to the program, and thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. I wanted to go back to the advertising issues that were posed. I think there's a quick way to kind of get around that or implement a new form of advertising, and that's essentially a live form of advertising, whether it's product placement, someone sipping on a can of their, an advertiser's soda, or even live advertising within the stream. This is brought to you by such and such who has this great product. Check them out on, blah, 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 their website.
It's an interesting thought. I'm glad you brought it up, Russell. Thank you. Douglas Rushkoff, I mean, that is a possibility.
Yeah.
Live advertising, product placement even.
Yeah, sure. And the more our live streams resemble advertisements, the more chance we have of monetizing them or at least getting free stuff for doing it. And I agree with what the last two callers have said, too. The more we go on platforms to mediate our interactions, the more we lose our home field advantage. Yes, you may reach more eyeballs doing it online than doing it in real life, but live streaming in real life actually has greater bandwidth, greater resolution. It's more immersive than anything they can or will be able to do online. And I my caution is for people to realize that when we go online, we are no longer human beings in potential solidarity, looking into each other's eyes and forging genuine rapport. It's something else. We're on a platform that we don't even necessarily understand who's monetizing it, why are they monetizing it, and where, in what direction are they pushing our interactions.
Stephen, I'm thinking in this conversation, will video become searchable in the future?
Sure. Well, one of the things that Facebook really has to tackle is it's not super easy to search for videos on Facebook, whereas it's easier to do so on YouTube. I think one interesting point that was brought up about the product placement, you're already seeing that on TV, on YouTube, sort of branded content, product placement, integrations. And that's because people have a real aversion to the sort of 30-second television ad and the 5-second pre-roll ad. So you're already seeing a real push over the past few years to integrate brands in. And, that is something that I think modern viewers are seeing and perhaps a little bit more cynical about these days. And I think that it's reasonable to suspect that media companies and anyone and celebrities who use Facebook Live might, hawk products much like they do on their Instagrams, whether that gets policed in a meaningful way and people know that they're being advertised to remains to be seen.
Last 10 seconds, Steven Perlberg, Brave New World here. How transformative do you see this being?
I think it's another evolution of Facebook's sort of sweeping impact on everything media. And it'll be really interesting to see if this is, a long-term trend.
Steven Perlberg covers media and advertising for The Wall Street Journal. Great to have you, Steven. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Douglas Rushkoff is professor of media theory and digital economics at the City University of New York. Thank you so much, Douglas. Nice to have you.
Thanks.
You can continue the conversation, listeners, and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.